Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Up and at him this morning. I couldn't sleep, I'll be honest with you. Had a difficult time, you know, with the sweep. And, you know, we're going to talk some about that today, but we're going to focus a lot of our energy today on, you know, the men's and women's basketball teams advancing to the NCAA tournament, as expected. But, you know, my concern is we're just kind of chasing the season now. You know what I mean? It's like you go into these weekends and you think you have to get one. At a bare minimum, you have to get one. Because then you only lose one game towards 500, right? I mean, you win one, you're 1-2. That's a big difference between being 0-3. It's a big difference. It just is. But nevertheless, I thought, you know what? Let's just go ahead and get the show done. And I already wrote the piece on Bryce Chance from yesterday. I thought Bryce was really good in postgame. Disappointing weekend. And listen, we played well enough to win. Just couldn't get the big hit late. You know, and Texas did what great teams do. They put games away, and we were unable to do that. So we'll break down the Sunday doubleheader later in the show. And I got a cool top 10 list for you today. Some old school tracks in honor of our birth, our multiple births in the NCAA tournament. I'd like to remind you, too, that this weekend I will be in Norman, Oklahoma, covering baseball. Jacob Bain will be in Raleigh, North Carolina to cover the men. So we'll have coverage of both events. It's the benefit of having a big staff that's willing to get out and go. So we'll have on-site coverage at both places. And so share that with you, because sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to staff the women. It kind of is what it is, you know. And I hope in the years ahead that I'll be able to hire somebody that is dedicated to women's sports at jeanspage.com almost exclusively. You know, that's my vision, is to have somebody that handles both softball, soccer, and women's basketball. That's my hope. Is we get into it. We're always looking to add, right? We're not ever looking to take away. We're always looking to add to our coverage. And so that's one of the things that's on the radar, maybe in the not so distant future, but that's coming. You know, we want to be able to provide great coverage of everything. And shout out to the softball team too. Man, what a great start they're off to. It's incredible. They take their first ever series at Alabama. Yeah, super, super excited for Coach Ricketts and Coach Brad and everybody involved with Mississippi State softball. You know, and just this time last year, remember going into the year last year, people were thinking, you know what, hey, I don't know if this is going to come together for us. It did. We had a good year last year and off to a tremendous start this year. And how many times have we done it? You know, you go out, you have a great non-conference record, you get into SEC play, and then things just kind of fall apart for us. That just hadn't been the case. You know, Bulldogs have played two ranked opponents in SEC play so far and have a 5-1 record in conference. Pretty impressive. And, of course, you know, we didn't play a weak non-conference schedule either. You know, you beat number 13 Texas Tech in the opening game of the year down in Clearwater, Florida. You lose to 7th-ranked Duke. You beat 19th-ranked Nebraska. I mean, you just start stacking wins early on here. And so it's not like it's a huge surprise that State's playing well as we get into conference play. But a lot to be excited about. Again, they sweep number 18 Auburn last weekend. And then this weekend, take 2 of 3. Yeah, at Alabama. And that first ball game was an absolute bloodbath. State wins 9-1 in six innings, drops 7-4 in game two in the doubleheader, and then come back on Sunday and win 4-3. And you know as well as I do, everybody hates to lose those home series, no matter the sport. So what a great, great, great start to the SEC slate for your softball Bulldogs. And it'll be a busy week as we step outside of the conference here for a stretch. We will be at UAB on Wednesday. And then travel to Northwestern this weekend to play the Wildcats up there in three. And then we'll have conclude the five-game road trip at Southern Miss on March 26th and return home for the All for Alex weekend against number two Texas. And that could be a very highly anticipated series as the Bulldogs look to kind of take a step forward farther in the SEC standing. So great way to start and some big things ahead. So very excited and very happy for everybody involved with Mississippi State softball. I think it is a tremendous thing. Like many of you, I root for the logo, right? I love all sports, but I tell you, when we have a rooting interest, it makes them so much more enjoyable. So congratulations to a 5-1 SEC start to the state softball team. Yeah, cool stuff. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I have loved them for a long time and eat there regularly. You know, it's not just a deal where, hey, they sponsor the show, so Steve is you know, singing their praises. No, I was a fan and a regular customer of Bulldog Burger Company before they were sponsors of this show, and really excited about everything that's happened with Bulldog Burger Company. I think it's an amazing thing. And happy for all of you and excited for you that you get a chance to go put your feet under their table and just kind of let them take care of everything. Great night out with friends, maybe a lunch date with a new person, right? Or maybe a lunch event with colleagues. There's just no better place to go because everybody's going to get what they want, right? There's something for everybody on that menu. But the main reason you go are those great restaurant-quality hamburgers. Be sure and check that out next time you're in town or on the way to town. Again, three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street, Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer that make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's start. The men's bracket was revealed first, so we're going to start there. You end up getting 14 teams in, and Greg Sankey kind of, you know, teased that last week. He was very confident. This is a number to remember, right? And a lot of people thought, you know, because some people are very football-centric, well, this is about the playoff. No, it's about the SEC setting a record. Yeah, setting a record for NCAA tournament teams in one particular bracket. And you got to think about that too, right? You start breaking this thing down. I mean, you know, there's technically 64 teams and you got the play-in games. And we do have a team in the play-in game. But, you know, basically you could have an SEC team in nearly every part of this bracket. It's pretty nuts to think about it. But, yeah, Auburn's the overall number one seed. No real surprise there. They'll play, you know, the winner of one of these play-in games. But, yeah, pretty significant. You know, we've played Auburn. We know how good they are. But they're, you know, again, in the South, they have a chance to do some big things. Now, a little bit deeper into that bracket, there's some other SEC teams that could run across them. Texas A&M comes in as a four seed. And I'm just not sold on this A&M team. But I tell you, looking at this bracket, you know, they just kind of grind it out and, you know, play their game. They got a chance to get to the Sweet 16. I don't think there's any question about it. So they get Yale, a 4 versus 13 game, and the winner of that will play Michigan UC San Diego, which probably going to be Michigan. I think Texas A&M kind of plays a Big Ten type of basketball. You know what I mean? They just do. They just kind of get out there and grind it out in the half court. Really good rebounding team. So, yeah, I would not be surprised to see A&M be a Sweet 16 team. Of course, that was a big win for State. You know, people rushed the court. Ole Miss, the bottom half of this quadrant, as the sixth seed, they'll also play a winner of a play-in game between a pair of 11s. And then if they advance, and they should, no matter who that proves to be, Iowa State and Lipscomb is opposite them. Iowa State the 3, Lipscomb the 14. So probably an Iowa State-Ole Miss matchup in round 2. Marquette, some people thought we may draw them. They end up facing off with New Mexico. Let's get down to the our next quadrant. Florida, a 1 seed. You know, and what a great close to the season for Florida. We talked about them before we played them, is that they were just kind of quietly going about their business, and everybody was talking so much about, you know, Auburn and Alabama, Tennessee a little bit. And then Florida's like, you know what, hey, it's cool. That's cool. You guys take the headlines. We'll take the low road, and we'll be where we need to be. Accomplished some incredible things with Todd Golden this year, and now they're a 1 seed. And Golden seemed to be pretty confident of that midway through the SEC tournament. Yeah, so, and it sets up pretty well for them, I think. When you think about this Oklahoma team, you know, a 9 seed versus UConn, that should be a great game. But with Florida's athleticism, I think they're good for a while. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just look at the way this bracket sets up for them. It's a pretty sweet ride, man. I mean, it is. Bottom half of this quadrant, you got Missouri there is the 6. I think Missouri got a really good draw. And I think Missouri also is a team that's capable of getting to the Sweet 16. We've seen them twice, right? We've seen them recently, too. This is a team I think is kind of built for March because they can play in the half court. They can get out and run. There's a lot of things they can do. You know, they'll knock off Drake and probably play Texas Tech in round 2. It's a game where they're certainly capable of winning. Arkansas gets in as a 10. They draw Kansas. I just never know what to expect from this Arkansas team. But, you know, Calipari, all those years at Kentucky, I'm sure when he sees Kansas, it brings out the best in him. That could be an awfully interesting matchup. Certainly could be. All right, let's get over here to the northeast quadrant here, technically called the East, and this is where we are. Of course, Duke is the 1. They'll await the way of a play-in game, and then Mississippi State there, the 8 seed against Baylor. A lot of people had us as the 9. At the end of the day, it all means the same thing. We all go in the same place, whether we're 8 or 9. We wanted to avoid this, but I think the Baylor draw is actually pretty good. We're going to get through the bracket. We're going to talk a little bit about Baylor as we get into this thing. It's nuts to think about how quickly they turn all this stuff around, you know. It's true. But Mississippi State versus Baylor, if we win, we would play Duke. And we touched on that a little bit last week, too. You know, Duke is kind of a hobbled team. You know, we'll see. And they're still very capable. They're still Duke, right? But, yeah, I mean, as far as ones go, I think I'd rather play Duke in their current situation than any of the others. Just me. Houston might not have been as bad either. But, you know, we've been war ready, I think, and now it's a new season. Getting a little bit lower here in the bracket. Vanderbilt's in the bottom half of our part. They will play St. Mary's. It's a 10-7 game. I won't be the least bit surprised if Vanderbilt wins that game, but they're paired up with Alabama and Robert Morris. Alabama, of course, the 2 seed on that side of things. So in order for us to get to the Final Four, we've got to beat Duke and Alabama. Fun stuff. I'm just happy that we can fill out a bracket with our team's name in it again. You know what I'm saying? It's been, you know, 3 years of this, but I'm hopeful we can get a game in, get a victory. And so the final 1 seed, of course, is Houston. And in the second round, there's a possibility they could face Georgia. Georgia and Gonzaga is the 8-9 game there in the Midwest. And then Kentucky comes in as a 3 seed. They get Troy. I think Kentucky, you know, granted they're a 3 seed, pretty smooth ride, I think, to get to the Sweet 16. And then Tennessee is a 2 seed down there at the bottom. They'll play Wofford and then the winner of UCLA, Utah State. Texas, you know, we didn't mention them. Texas gets in, the 14th team in, as an 11, and they will be in the Midwest, Texas versus Xavier. And then the winner of that game, of course, you know, will play the 6 in the Midwest, which is Illinois, which could have you paired. And if you beat Illinois, you're paired up with probably Kentucky there in the second round. But a lot of controversy about this North Carolina inclusion, and I think it's kind of like LSU in the NCAA baseball tournament, right? Like when Paulman, like there were some teams, like when Maneri was going to retire, there were some teams that were more capable, you know, they got in, and so LSU gets in on their name recognition thing over some of those teams. I think that's how this North Carolina thing worked out too. You know, I think it's North Carolina, right? We can't have March Madness without North Carolina, but I think we actually could. I think the world would keep spinning on its axis, but not a great North Carolina team. Let's take a quick look at Baylor. I mean, if you look at this, as far as 8-9 games go, I think maybe we're in a pretty good spot here. I haven't watched Baylor play this year. Maybe you have. I have not. But they finished 8th in the Big 12. You know, so it's kind of like our contemporary, even though we played in a much, much, much tougher conference. I think that's fair to say. But we got to come ready to play. You know, we felt pretty confident. You know, with the Izzo factor last year was an issue with Michigan State. You know, that guy's built for March. But this Baylor team, 19-14 overall, 10-10 in the conference. And so you kind of look at what we've done, what they've done. You can say, you know what? Hey, it kind of makes sense that teams like these would pair off in the NCAA tournament. I think there's a good chance we win this game, but we'll do some more research between you know, now and Wednesday, you know, and do kind of a little more in-depth preview. But, you know, early in the year, you know, they got absolutely destroyed by Gonzaga, but they beat Arkansas in the American Airlines Arena by 5. And granted, Arkansas has gotten better as the year has gone on, as you guys are well aware. But these guys are putting up some big numbers early on. Score of 100 against Sam Houston and Tarleton State, as you'd expect. But then they get St. John's in double overtime, and they win that game by 1. You know, so this is kind of a high-octane offense. They go up, they play Tennessee, though. They get beat by 15. So a pretty beefy non-conference schedule. They blast UNO. They lose in stores to UConn by 4. Another NCAA tournament team. They blow out Abilene Christian, Norfolk State, Arlington Baptist. They get Utah. They're in Waco, 81-56. They lose to Iowa State by 19. Big 12 games. They blast Cincinnati. They win over Arizona State in overtime. Lose to Arizona. Lose to TCU. They beat Kansas State. They beat Utah. Lose in Provo to BYU. They beat number 11 Kansas, 81-70, in Waco. Not a great year for Kansas, but at the time they were ranked pretty high. And again, they're in the tournament. They get beat pretty well in Lubbock, 14 points. Bounce back to beat Central Florida. They lose to Houston, 76-65. West Virginia, that's one of the snubs, right? A lot of people thought West Virginia's in, North Carolina's out. Well, Baylor beat West Virginia, 74-71. You know what? If you win that game, you're not having this discussion. They lose to Arizona. They lose to Colorado. Lose to Cincinnati. Things were not good for a while. They bounced back to beat Oklahoma State, TCU. In Waco, they nearly pull off the upset of Houston, but they fall by 4. Again, it's kind of how we've been, right, at times, right? I mean, you get a ranked opponent at your place, and you just can't finish the deal. They get Kansas State, 70-56. This is in the tournament, 70-56. And they lose to Texas Tech again by 2. And again, Texas Tech, a 3-seed in this tournament. And so they've played well against their contemporaries and then sometimes not been able to close the deal. But, yeah, I mean, you look at it just – if you just look at the record and say, oh, these guys are just 5 games above 500, well, that's true. But then when you look at the fact that some of the teams that they've played, It's a pretty beefy schedule, especially in non-conference. 13-3 at home, 3-9 in true road games, and 3-2 on a neutral floor. So we're going to have to bring the lunch pail to win this game. And I expect Chris Jans to have a game plan together. Again, we'll break them down a little more thoroughly on Wednesday. But this game going to be played, as we mentioned, in Raleigh, North Carolina. I think just about everybody on the beat will be there, be represented anyway. And so that's going to be Friday, 11:15. And so we don't play Thursday. So, you know, we'll have a chance to watch some games and then enjoy our game. You know, last year, you know, we played so early in the tournament. It's like the tournament, we were eliminated so early, it's like there's no point in even watching, right? I mean, it kind of ruins the fun of the first day when your team plays and loses. The tournament loses its luster. You love those days, like, you know, we're playing Friday, and on Thursday you've got all these upsets, and you've got, you know, a 15 versus a 2, and they're taking somebody to overtime. It's the joy of the tournament, you know, those first couple days. So we need to find a way to win and get to Sunday. But, yeah, 11:15, of course, it'll be broadcast everywhere. You don't have to ask. And, of course, you know, we're part of CBS Interactive, so CBS going to have this game. So that's important to understand. Let's jump over here and kind of look at the women's side of things.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And, you know, again, you know, great run for the SEC, you know, when, you know, Ole Miss, the first team that's mentioned in the bracket reveal, because they're in that, you know, northwest quadrant, you know, Spokane, you know, they'll play at home early, but they're in that quadrant, right? So Ole Miss will open with Ball State, and then they get Baylor. And Baylor's been a great women's basketball program for a long time, even after Kim Mulkey's left, you know. And so it'll be interesting. It certainly will be. You kind of wonder, you know, what are those crowds going to look like? You know what they looked like at Mississippi State, right? I mean, we all saw that. You know, we had some big crowds. They were great. Ole Miss has not really had maybe the same fan turnout that we have over the years, especially when things are rolling well for us. You know, it's true. And kind of looking at this thing too, kind of paired it up too. The we're going to talk about some baseball stuff here too, but it kind of works out good for Ole Miss too, almost women's basketball, because baseball is on the road in Missouri. And so you don't have people that have to kind of, you know, pick and choose, right? You have plenty of room, right? So maybe they'll have a good turnout. We'll see. A little bit lower in this quadrant, LSU, the 3, will play San Diego State. They're paired up with the Florida State George Mason game. A little bit farther down, looking here, somebody's wrong here. I may have a bad bracket, but nevertheless, we're here. And it's USC, right? USC against UNC Greensboro. We will play Cal in an 8-9 game. And so our reward, should we win, will be able to play number one USC. Yeah, fun stuff, right? Right in LA. A little bit deeper in the bracket, Kentucky, the 4 seed against Liberty. Oklahoma, the 3 seed, a team that we beat against Florida Gulf Coast. Flipping over to the other side, South Carolina, of course, the one on their side against Tennessee Tech. Alabama, a 5. Good year for the Crimson Tide. They'll play Green Bay, Wisconsin, Green Bay. They're paired up with Maryland and Norfolk State. A little bit deeper, Vanderbilt, in a 7-10 game against Oregon. The winner will play probably Duke. I don't think there's much question about that. Texas, the one seed. On their side, they'll play winner of a play-in game and then face off against Illinois or Creighton. And then Tennessee, they're in the 5. Texas got a really good draw, I think. Really good draw. So, good year for the SEC, as you guys, you know, well aware. And it's interesting, you get basically two old Pac-12 teams in USC and UCLA against Texas and South Carolina's the other two ones. Let's take a quick look at Cal. Quick look. And we'll get more in-depth about this, you know, as we get closer to it. But just kind of giving our flash, right, as we look at it today. It's also interesting to me, you know, the matchups that tournaments bring together. You know, I mean, like right now when I say the name Xavier, longtime Mississippi State basketball fans kind of wince, right? Or Butler, right? And it's so interesting, those are the ones you remember. You know, I throw out Cincinnati and you're thinking Damon Flint and Danny Fortson, how we won that, right? I mean, you know, but that's the beauty of the tournament is a lot of times it gives you matchups you would never see otherwise. And I think that's the joy of it, right? I mean, it's these cross-sectional matchups, and especially, you know, when you have the upset that doesn't involve your team, right? When you see some, you know, when you see Coppin State or Valparaiso, and God bless Bryce Drew, when you look at that aspect of it, you're like, you know what, those are the memories of March that we have and that are dear to us, even though they don't necessarily involve our team. This Cal team, good team, 25-8, 12-6 in their conference. And you look at that and you think, man, how did they get 8-9 game, right? You know, well, I think some of it had to do with the non-conference. They were 16-1 at home, and they weren't a bad team away. 7-5 in road games, and then 2-2 on neutral floor. But you know, this non-conference schedule. I mean, and again, I say it all the time: the biggest variance in all of college sports, I think, is in women's basketball. The gap between the haves and the have-nots is tremendous. I mean, you see people just get beat ungodly in women's basketball. I mean, it's ridiculous. But yeah, this non-conference schedule is pretty light. You know, St. Mary's, Idaho State, San Jose State, Gonzaga, Grambling State, and they beat Auburn. You know, and granted, Auburn wasn't great this year, but they did schedule them, and Auburn goes out to Berkeley and plays the game. But you know, so they start out there, you know, reeling off, you know, 6 straight wins, and they lose to Michigan State and then beat Arizona. And they get Alabama in the SEC, ACC Challenge, and again, everybody had to go there, you know. But, yeah, before they even get into conference play, man, they're just kind of running through this thing, you know, and really not getting a lot of opposition. You know, truly. I mean, and they get into the ACC, and things change a little bit, you know. That's one of those things that always happens, right? Once you get into league play, you kind of figure out kind of what's going on with everybody. What's everybody really about? It's just, you know, how life works. But Cal, going into ACC play, see if we can find this. Were they 13-1? I think that's correct. I think they were 13-1 going in. Yeah. Yeah, well, no. They were 12-1. They played Stanford and then had a handful of non-conference games. But they beat Stanford by 20. But, yeah, you know, really, 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 really good record in non-conference play. The long loss, of course, coming to Michigan State in the what they call the Acrisure Classic in Palm Springs, California. But outside of that, I mean, and again, give them some credit. You know, we talked about a lot of these non-conference games were just, you know, kind of exhibitions. But they did schedule, you know, a few, you know, Power Four teams to come in there and play. So always interesting in that aspect of it. But, yeah, they get into conference play. Things tighten up a little bit. They lose at Clemson. They bounce back, win at SMU, and they beat NC State. And it's so weird that Cal is in the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference, when they're on the Pacific. You know, it's weird. It's weird. But, yeah, I mean, how great is the ACC this year in women's hoops? Yeah, I don't know. Got to be fair about that. But yeah, I mean, you know, they lose to Duke, number 14 Duke, who made the tournament, of course. They lose North Carolina at home. They lose Notre Dame. And so it's like they kind of beat their contemporaries, but they had a difficult time getting up to the next level. So ranked opponents gave them some trouble, as they should. But Notre Dame eliminates them from the ACC tournament by 9 points. But, hey, this is a team that's going to be ready to go. And when we get ready to get a little closer to this, this will be a Saturday game, so we'll preview this on Friday. But going to be playing at the Gaylord Center there in L.A. So a lot to keep up with. And it's so interesting, too. You know, this week, too, we got, you know, starting on Tuesday, you know, we'll have football practice, too. You know, so it's going to be probably a busy week. I don't know that it becomes a busy 2 weeks. I wish that it would. I don't know that it will be. But, yeah, it's going to be a busy week with the beginning of spring football practice and now the NCAA tournament. And then, of course, now we're in SEC play in baseball. So a lot going on this week. A great time to be a part of GenesPage.com. You get your first month for a dollar. And come and be a part of our merry band of misfits. Nobody's bringing you better coverage of Mississippi State than we are. And we look forward to the week. Got to go get the oil change before me and Ruby hit the road. But nevertheless, a lot to be excited about. I want to be a program that we are not just satisfied with making tournaments. I know many of you feel the same way. It's like, well, at least we made the tournament. I look forward to the days when that is the expectation rather than the hope. And I think all year long we thought, hey, we had a chance to get out this first weekend, potentially be a Sweet 16 team. We've kind of squandered that and put ourselves in a very difficult position. But there's a reason we play the games. And now the focus is let's go win the first game and then we'll see what happens in game two. You never know what can happen this time of year in the NCAA tournament. Very happy to participate in that. If memory serves me correct, this is only the sixth time in school history that both the men and the women made the NCAA tournament in the same year, and we've only won a game on both sides one time. So this could be a momentous week in that respect when it comes in Mississippi State basketball and athletics history. So it's time for us to kind of name our player of the weekend or whatever. We're going to do that on behalf of closewithblair.com. Blair's number is 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. Blair has been in the mortgage industry for 24 years. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair is the name to know. This is a very important adult decision. A lot of people out there vying for your business. There are a lot of people that can get you in the house, right? But you need to get in there with a good deal. You don't need to get in there and have to live above your means. And then next thing you know, you're having to work extra hours just to pay the bills, right? There's nothing like having a new home and being able to enjoy the new home, not just a place to get your mail and store your stuff. Work with Blair. Priority One Mortgage. Same level of service that he's always provided. He's a bulldog through and through. Rides the wave of emotion just like you do. Several Boneyard listeners have closed loans with him. Let him be your advocate with underwriting. That's closeofblair.com. So I just thought, you know, hey, rather than give it to a player, especially after a weekend that we didn't play well in baseball, let's give a close with Blair, closers of the week to Sam Purcell and Chris Jantz. And we've never been to the NCAA tournament 5 years in a row. We've went four one time under Rick Stansberry, but now we've gone three times under Chris Jantz, and it's his first 3 years. What an incredible start to his tenure here at Mississippi State. Sam Purcell had his team in the postseason every year. Of course, last year we didn't make the big dance, but we did this year. And again, Sam, another great start to his tenure. You know, we talk a lot about hires and things of that nature. Obviously, both of those guys were great hires and a chance for us to play for some significant things still ahead of us, no doubt about it. And it's so interesting, too. There were a lot of people this year that kind of wondered, hey, is Sam Purcell going to remain with us? Would we move on from him? But then Sam answers the call, gets us back into the tournament, and we'll see how things go from there. And, of course, you know, a lot of a chatter out there, too, you know, about Sam not really being a candidate at Auburn. We shared that basically the day that Johnny Harris was relieved of her duties, that we were hearing that Auburn was looking in other directions. Not to say that Sam wouldn't come into focus at some point, but a lot of Auburn people now are kind of suggesting that head coach at Arizona might actually be the way to go there. Also, Chris Jan's name has been linked to the Iowa vacancy, and it's because he's from Iowa. Our publisher of the Iowa side kind of reached out, kind of gave me heads up, said, hey, we're going to have Jans on our hot board, but it's really just kind of us being thorough, you know, putting a full list of candidates together. He goes, I haven't really heard anything about him being connected to the job, but he is from Iowa, and we do think somebody will at least kick the tires with him. We don't expect that to be anything serious, but you never know. I mean, in our industry, we've learned, right? It's never the first name. Right. Sometimes these processes can be a little bit long, but yeah, it'd be nice to go through this and have both Sam and Chris back for next year. Yeah, it'd be great. All right, next segment of the show is the top 10 list, brought to you by our friends at Kalito Guitars. You owe it to yourself to go check out their website too. That's KalitoGuitars.com. The thing about that I think is so important too is, you know, we talk about these things, and you need to go do your own research, okay? Kalito Guitars, that's C-A-L-I-D-O, Guitars. It's a great guitar store in Lake Jackson, Texas, that is owned and operated by Mississippi State folks. We like to keep business in the family when we can, and many of you have new players or old players, or maybe you're just looking to upgrade your rig. Yeah, turn to our friends at Kalito Guitars, and we're going to give you some incentive to do so. They sell electric, acoustic, and classical guitars. They're known for their high-quality instruments and exemplary customer service. Premium soundwoods, including spruce and cypress, mahogany, rosewood, with a superb fit and finish. Excellent setup for easy playing. Great advice from their guitar experts. Incredible service, as we mentioned. Guitars for beginners, professionals, pretty much everything you need. Whether it be, you know, gig bags or cases, guitar strings. And there's something cool about having a guitar and keeping it in a case. And you're going to spend all this money, and you love that instrument so much, you need to protect it. Guitar cases are always a good idea, right? It just is. You know, to be honest with you, I got my Ibanez over there leaning up against the wall. I should probably get a case for it. I need to play it more, too. But all that understood, visit KalitoGuitars.com or call 979-297-4733. Again, that's 979-297-4733. And again, these are Mississippi State people. And if you listen to our show, whether you're shopping online or shopping over the phone or shopping in person, let them know you heard about them on our show and give them promo code BSR. That's your coupon code. That gets you 10% off your total purchase. How about that? And free shipping and no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to that, 5% of your purchase will be donated to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. What a great deal and what amazing generosity from our friends at Kalito Guitars. Again, that's Kalito Guitars, C-A-L-I-D-O, guitars.com. All right, so since we're in March Madness and everybody calls it the big dance, we're dancing today on the top 10 list. But they're not necessarily all dance songs. They're just kind of songs about dancing. Many of these from the 70s and 80s, right? And there's a couple that are a little bit later. But nevertheless, I thought I would start with one of my favorite kind of hidden gems. I love the band Hurricane. They're now defunct. But, you know, it's so interesting. When that Over the Edge album came out, I was like, these guys are going to be huge, huge. I love that album. Still listen to that album. I think you should, too, if you don't. Now, their second album came out, I didn't like it as much as the first, but it's still a really, really good album, right? It's pretty cool, to be honest with you. And wanted to kind of mention that to you guys. That album, Slave to the Thrill, was released back in 1990. Only five albums for this. And the reason why is because, I don't know if you know this, guys, but Robert Sarzo, you know, the connected to Rudy, was part of this. But Kelly Hansen, who's the lead singer to with Foreigner, was a part of this band. Doug Aldrich, who was the guitar player for Whitesnake for a while, was also the guitar player on Slave to the Thrill. And so we're going to go with Dance Little Sister from Hurricane. We've had that on the top 10 list before. It's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. And you may not know this, but Carlos Cavazo, yeah, from Quiet Riot, he is now the current guitar player in Hurricane. Pretty cool, right? Okay, number nine, and this will go back a little bit, really to kind of, you know, a lot of people know the Kinks, but this was a big hit for them years ago, and, I, you know, there's a few songs out there from the Kinks, you know, and you think, well, you know, Lola is a big one, but Come Dancing was one that I thought was pretty significant, and it kind of fits our motif today, so it's your number nine track. And number eight, another 80s track. And I remember, like, this was kind of part of the MTV generation. So much of this, you know, the Hooters, right? Out of Philadelphia. Kind of a ska band, a little bit different. But the Hooters were interesting. And I would submit to you, these guys are still touring too. I guess everybody ran out of money. You know, that's kind of how it works, I guess. But they had some hits. They really did. And a lot of it was kind of on the alternative charts. But, you know, probably their biggest hit in the United States was And We Danced off the Nervous Night album. They had a few other ones out there that charted well internationally. But I would say that was probably... That's probably the song you look at and say, yeah, I remember these guys for this. So, And We Danced by the Hooters, number eight. Number seven, kind of a shout out to my sister-in-law, Mandy. When she was just a younger child, and I don't know what happens, you know, that gets in the minds of young people. We've all had these moments, but she loved Men Without Hats, The Safety Dance. She loved it so much that one day she took a marker and she wrote The Safety Dance on the wall in the family hallway. Yeah, she did. That's how important it was. Safety Dance. And Men Without Hats, obviously a one-hit wonder. But it's so incredible to think that that song, to this day, people still talk about that song. Interesting. Again, Men Without Hats, The Safety Dance, number seven. Number six, a band that had some incredible harmonies. And I think this may be the song that people know them best for. Maybe. They had a few other kind of hits, but it's so interesting how, you know, I go back and think about those bands from the 70s and early 80s. So many of those bands that they could really play and they could really harmonize. Yeah, it's true. But I think this is, yeah, this was not, well, this wasn't their only gold single. But in 75, Orleans, who is actually from New York. Did you know that? Did you know that Orleans was from New York? You thought, oh, this has got to be a Southern band. They're not. They're from Woodstock, New York. But Dance With Me is going to be your number six track. Still the One was probably... just a little bit ahead. Still the One went to five on the U.S. charts. Dance With Me, number six. And those were a year apart. And so it looked like maybe they would have a little staying power. They did not. They did go back into the top 20 with Love Takes Time in 1979. That was a few years later. But Dance With Me is a great track. Great track. Top 10 in multiple countries around the world. Pretty nice stuff. All right, number five, a song, and I remembered when he hosted the Grammys that year. I think that's right, or the American Music Awards. He said tonight was going to be outrageous. That's right, Lionel Richie. Dancing on the Sea, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but man, it's such a fun song. You know, it's really just a fun song. And the video, at the time, they put a lot of time and production value into it and made it look really cool. And even though we knew that it was all, they even had like a video to show the making of the video. That was a big thing in the MTV generation too, to show how they ended up dancing on the ceiling. Well, it's, of course, they just rotated the stage, you know. And so, nevertheless, Dance on the Ceiling, number five. Number four, going back to a band, we probably should do a top 10 of this band. And part of it's because I think some of you young bucks need to be introduced. You've heard of him and you've heard some of the songs, but I don't know that you fully appreciate the joy and majesty of Sly and the Family Stone. Many of you have heard the songs that the Pep Band plays, you know, some of those great tracks. But it's so interesting to look, you know, how many incredible songs that Sly and the Family Stone had. I mean, and they were called Psychedelic Soul, which I think is perfect. But they were so high energy with everything they did. And Sylvester Stewart, Sly and the Family Stone, out of Dallas, Texas. Yeah, super cool. So we're going to go with Dance to the Music. But it's so interesting to think about Sly and the Family Stone. I mean, like, when you go back and look at the influence that this band had on music, it's pretty incredible. It truly is. Began way back in the 60s, but it was really the Dance to the Music album in 68 that really kind of got things rolling, you know, for them. You know, and of course there were a lot of other songs that followed, you know, Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself, all that good stuff. But an incredible, incredible, incredible run for Sly and the Family Stone, one of the greatest American music acts of all time, in my estimation. And really, we talk about, you know, funk and, you know, soul and things like that. They were really game changers in many respects, but it wasn't just the music, but it was the fashion and the image and the incredible performance of Sly and the Family Stone. They were just an authentic band that did some super cool things. All right, number three. We would be remiss if we didn't mention that Dancing Days Are Here Again from Led Zeppelin. It seems like that's always the kind of the lazy title, I guess, you know. Dancing Days Are Here Again, and it's off Houses of the Holy. And your good friend and host was able to find an original pressing on vinyl of Houses of the Holy. I can tell you, my vinyl collection never gets played. It's just truly a collection. I mean, it's just so much more convenient to pull things up on my phone or my computer. But sometimes when I'm just shooting pool here around the house, the wife and I will put on an album. It's just one of those things. It's so inconvenient to have to go over there and flip it all the time. You know, it's just, you know, you forget it sounds so cool, but there is a lot of inconvenience with vinyl. You know, there's a reason we were excited about CDs, especially the repeat function. But yeah, Dancing Days is on the 1973 album Houses of the Holy, and I think everybody talks about the earlier albums. I think this is one of those albums that maybe doesn't get its due. And people are like, but Steve, come on. It's true. I think it's fair to say that Houses of the Holy was a tremendous album. And, you know, the cover itself was kind of controversial. But, you know, you go back and you look at, you know, the track listing on this thing. It's absolutely incredible. You know, the song remains the same. The Rain Song, Over the Hills, Far Away, Dancing Days, Dire Maker, No Quarter, The Ocean. I mean, come on. It's 40 minutes of perfection, man. All right, number two. I love this song off Van Halen 2. I love it. And I always have. I've always loved it. And I don't know that David Lee Roth actually gets enough credit. You know, it's like you watch the Sammy Hagar interviews, and I love Sammy. I'm not hating on Sammy. I love Sammy, and I enjoyed the Van Hagar aspect of it. But it's so interesting to me that people sometimes just act like David Lee Roth was just some kind of idiot. You know, Dave was actually a great showman. He was also the leader of the band. And this is one of those tracks that I don't know that a lot of people fully appreciate. And they hear it and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I love this song, but it's probably not something you would call up regularly. It went to 15 on the Billboard charts here in America. I think it's better than that. It's Dance the Night Away. And you don't think a lot about dancing and rock music, but this is one of those songs that gets people on floors. It does. And it's interesting, David Lee Roth wanted to initially call it Dance Lolita Dance. But Eddie Van Halen said, no, let's do Dance the Night Away. Felt that they, better chance. Nevertheless, number two on your list. But number one, truly a dance song, and it's not even called dance officially, even though everybody refers to it as such. It's CNC Music Factory's Gonna Make You Sweat, and the subtitle is Everybody Dance Now. And that's what everybody knows the song as, Martha Wash, right? And it's so interesting. I think I may have shared this before. There was some controversy when that video came out. Because you had Freedom Williams, right? Everybody knew that. Everybody knew that he was great. But they had this incredibly attractive model who was kind of verbalizing or visualizing the lyrics. And she didn't sing them. Martha Wash did. And then so people were like, hey, why are they having this very thin and beautiful model lip sync in a video? And I hate to burst everybody's bubble, but everybody lip synced in videos back then. They weren't actually performing. It was kind of a rarity. You know, sometimes people would do it live, but Martha Wash, of course, the legendary Martha Wash, an incredible powerhouse voice, has just done been involved with so much stuff and still active and still performing. But she was the voice behind that Everybody Dance Now. And so people were really like, hey, well, this is wrong. You know, the reality of it is most people in these videos, it's all fake anyway, right? But so then they had to go add that and credit her in the video. It would say, you know, by Martha Wash, and I can't remember the young lady's name. Zelma, that's it, Zelma Davis. And so it was so interesting. There were just people that were upset about that. And there's a lot of things in life worth being upset about. But I don't know if this was it, but Martha Wash, a former weather girl, was properly credited with this. But, you know, it's so interesting because Zelma Davis wasn't just a pretty face. You know, she was also involved with some other CNC Music Factory hits. And so, but it was just interesting. And it's also interesting to me. But we're happy to be back in the NCAA tournament on both the men's and the women's side. So we're going to celebrate dancing for as long as we can. And again, the ride may end this week. I don't think any of us have any, you know, illusions about winning an AFL championship. But, man, how great would it be to make it to the Sweet 16. It'd be incredible on both sides. And it's going to be very difficult for us to do coming from the 8-9 game. But there's a reason you play the games. I mean, it wouldn't be a novel thing for a number one to get upset in the second round. That's happened, especially on the women's side. But the reality of this thing is we are still playing basketball. And I read some of the sentiment out there among some of our fans. So there's just nothing to be excited about. And I think, you know, I just disagree. And I know it's been a difficult year this year. You know, football obviously was well beneath our expectations. We weren't expecting a lot, and we still were disappointed. We were expecting to win maybe 5-6, at a minimum 4 games. We won 2. You know, of course, you lose your starting quarterback, and it's going to impact it. But let's be honest. I mean, you know, that trip to Arizona State, we didn't play well then either. We played well once the game was out of hand and the edge comes off for the other team. But, yeah, it's tough when you have football go as poorly as it did and then men's basketball, you know, we try to rationalize it a little bit and say, well, maybe we overachieved a little bit. No, we didn't. We underachieved a little bit, and it's okay to say that. It's okay to say that. That's not to say the season's been a disappointment, but I think most of us expected to be, you know, maybe a five seed. Maybe that's asking a little much, considering maybe we didn't know how strong the league was going to be this year. But, yeah, some people had us projected early on as a two or a three, and that was a little bit up. And I think that kind of, you know, tainted our perception a little bit. But, yeah, we've lost some games we shouldn't have lost, and it's okay to say that. It doesn't mean we're a bad team. It just means that we've had some losses that we shouldn't have had. And in this league, you got to bring it every single night. But it's okay to say that we underachieved a little bit. But no matter what, we're in the tournament, we're still playing, and anything can happen. On the women's side, yeah, we really thought the men would finish in the top half of the league. We didn't expect to contend, but we were hoping to finish maybe in the top, you know, six or so. On the women's side, we were hoping just to finish in the top half. We didn't quite do that, but here we are. You know, that's the bottom line. We're still playing and didn't get the best draws, obviously, but we kind of got what we deserved. And I think that's the important aspect to remember in all this, is we got what we deserved based on the games we won and didn't win. Simple as that. Not being negative or critical, I'm just kind of calling it as I see it. You win a couple of games here or there, and you make your path to the Sweet 16 and NCAA tournament that much easier. That's not a hot take. That's just reality. But I like our programs. I liked our coaches. And I'm curious to see, you know, especially on the men's side, kind of what we do in the portal. And that'll all be part of things, you know, sooner rather than later. That's an important aspect of every bit of this. You know, is sustaining success. And I think Chris Jans is a guy that has done some pretty special things. And I think there's some special things to come. And as I mentioned, you know, the whole Iowa thing, I'm not worried about that. But I know at some point that he'll leave, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the industry. But I think no matter when that is, he has made it that much easier to hire the next guy. Because he showed that you can come in here, number one, that we have people that are committed to men's basketball, and that you can come to Mississippi State and you can win, and you can make the NCAA tournament, you can hang banners, and you can recruit here. And really, I think, too, there's just you have some autonomy here, right? You don't have people here interfering with men's basketball. It's like, hey, Chris, you know, hey, here's your budget, and here's the equipment, and here's the keys to the gym, and let us know if you need anything. Right, we just don't have people that interfere here. We have a lot of people that are incredibly committed to men's basketball financially, and also too. And I don't just mean buying tickets, but you know, part of the NIL fundraising opportunities and things of that nature. We have a lot of people that are very committed to men's basketball, but we don't have these meddlers in men's basketball. Of course, a few people would like a little more access than others, and they're entitled to it. But my point is, I think that's one of the things that makes Mississippi State a good job, is you can win here and you can kind of do it your way. You don't have somebody out there trying to manipulate you. And I think that speaks volumes about our basketball donorship and our fans that are really committed to men's basketball. So I hope this week is a good one on both sides of the men's and the women's. And I think another thing too, you know, when you're Sam Purcell and you have to follow what Vic Schaefer did, granted you're Nicky McRae-Pinson and you're Doug Novak removed, but you're the longest tenured coach since Vic Schaefer was here, and that's a pretty big shadow. And then you look and see what Vic's doing in Texas, right? And so I think Sam has acquitted himself pretty well. Have we dropped some games we shouldn't? Yes. Have we won some games people didn't expect? Yes. But are we putting together a good women's basketball program? I would say yes. I think that's fair, and I don't know that a lot of people fully maybe appreciate the efforts and the strides that we have taken. And it's so interesting. Sometimes, you know, people have this revisionist history, right? There's so much of that. Sometimes we look back in hindsight and we're like, well, you know, I don't know. Sam's been here 3 years, been in the postseason all 3 years, and of course last year went to the WBIT. But in the NCAA tournament, I think that's an important aspect of this when you, again, go look back and see kind of what we expected and kind of what we've gotten on really both sides of the ledger the last few years, I think it's pretty significant. And again, you go back and you think about your tournament appearances and things of that nature. You know, guys, the tournament's not that old, but our first berth in a tournament was 1999. Did you know that? Yeah. So this has all basically happened in the last 25 years. There wasn't a ton of tradition to speak of. You know, a lot of people speak so glowingly, you know, about those things that have happened. But, you know, we played in the Sweet 16 for the first time in 2010. And so this has been, you know, kind of a slow build and burn for Mississippi State. But the reality of it is that we're back in the dance and a chance to go do something cool. For sure. And I'm grateful. I know you guys are as well. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart providing great merchandise for a great fan base for a long time. They are an institution here in Starkville. The best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe is at Campus Bookmart. Whether you're looking for apparel, gift ideas, diploma frames, everything you need to outfit your fan cave, you can find at Campus Bookmart. Some cool tailgating supplies, things of that nature. We encourage you, as always, to support Starkville's businesses and Campus Bookmart doing an amazing job in that respect. They're worthy of your patronage. If you can't make it to town to see their smiling faces and get your complimentary hug, and maybe that's just me, you can visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders above $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And reminder, graduation coming up. The diploma frame is a great gift for the Mississippi State graduate in your life and your family. It is a timeless gift, and every time they turn and look at that diploma, they will remember you are the one that gave them that. And I like to be a thoughtful gift giver. I think that is one of the coolest things you can do for your graduate. Just go ahead and get that ordered and have it ready. And then when they get that diploma, it can be nicely framed in an incredible diploma frame on their wall, whether it be in the office or the home. And always order yourself a little something too. Yeah, campusbookmart.net. Well, it was a very forgettable weekend in Mississippi State baseball. Here's the thing, I'm not one of these best of time, worst of times people, but yeah, we are definitely underperforming as related to my expectations. And of course, nobody reached out to me and say, Steve, how do you think we should do? I think we should be in the hosting conversation this year. I don't know that this team is capable of being a top eight national seed. I think the evidence at this point kind of shows that, but it is a long year. As we discussed on Saturday, State loses the Friday game 8-7 due to the weather, and want to give a, you know, certainly offer our support to our friends. Our longtime poster at jeanspage.com, Wayne Bullock's been my friend a long time, lives in Tower Town. And they have come out okay, but their neighbors not so much. And you know, some of our folks down there, a little closer to home, Society Hill, Bunker Hill, a lot of people, Taylorsville, of course, up there in Elliott and Grenada County. We had a lot of people that are really suffering, and I saw that we had 29 tornadoes in the state of Mississippi on Saturday. And I want to make a point, too. I've seen some people out here saying, hey, it wasn't as bad as they suggested, and thank God for that, right? As always, I would rather err on the side of caution and for public and human safety than to just take a chance and have a greater loss of life. And I can promise you, those people that lost their homes, they're feeling much differently today. Yeah, they're not gonna sit here and say, hey, it wasn't so bad. And I got some people that we're connected to down in South Mississippi, indirectly, you know, it's like 2 degrees of separation that, you know, some friends of mine, they had put together kind of like this wedding venue place with, you know, with a barn and all kind of stuff like that. And They were booked up, you know, all through every weekend from now to the month of June, and they've lost their business, you know. And those things, it's tough to recover from. It truly is. It truly is. And it kind of put things in perspective, you know, when you think about, hey, we just lost some ball games that we shouldn't. And there's some other people out there lost some things of much more significance. But that understood, you know, we're emotionally invested in this baseball team, and we expect to have excellence. We didn't have it this weekend. It's a new week this week, so we'll kind of move ahead. But, yeah, the first game yesterday, you know, we get out to a 1-0 start, you know, and a chance for us to do some, you know, some big things early, and we don't, right? And we get the 1-2-3 inning. From Ben Davis and feel pretty good. And the next thing you know, we got, you know, Bryce Chance works a walk. We get fielder's choice, still got a runner on. Noah Sullivan singles. Hines walks to load the bases. They end up plunking downs. And so we get the run pushed across there. But we pop up to short. So a chance for us to really draw some early blood, and we don't. And Ben Davis, we did not get the Ben Davis that we have seen. And maybe the moment was a bit big for him, you know, pitching against a top 10 team, pitching at home, bigger crowd. And we come out there in the second, right, and we get a ground out, to, you know, 3-1 pitch, and we get a good, we kind of work our way back, and we get the chopper out to Sanders. And then it's a walk, and then it's a strikeout looking, and then it's a hit by pitch. And so we get two runners on that we have basically gifted them, and then you give up a guy that was hitting .185. Easton Winfield hits a double to right, two runs score, and then Schuster comes behind him with another double. They trade places. So three runs there, and then we followed up with a walk, and it was clear that Ben Davis just simply didn't have it. But it was so interesting. It was just a two-run game, but it felt so much bigger than that. Like Dylan Cup works for another walk, and then – Gat Sanders hits one right on the nose, and they end up doubling off doing two. You know, it's just like, you know what? Even we get a guy on base, and we hit a ball hard, and we give up two outs on the play. But again, we're just down two runs, and we just keep thinking, okay, we just need something good to happen. Well, we navigate through a very interesting third. And again, Ben Davis just wasn't good. He wasn't. Walks a leadoff hitter. We get a line out to left, and that ball was hit on the screws. And then Galvin singles to left, runners at first and second. Then we walk to load the bases. And you're thinking, this game is fixing to get away from us. But no, it didn't. We get the pop-up on the infield to a non-productive out. Now you're a pitch away from getting out of it. And we bring in Evan Sierra, and he strikes out Easton Winfield on three pitches. So they leave him loaded. And we talk about that all the time. You know, we left them loaded in the first. It came back to bite us. We were hoping it would come back to bite them. And in some respects, it did. Sierra was excellent, absolutely excellent. And I don't know if you don't start considering him for a weekend spot if you need it. But, you know, you think about this, it's the fifth, but it's really the seventh, right, because you're playing a seven-inning game. In state, again, Dylan Cup here being a rally starter, Dylan's done a really good job. His on-base percentage, some one of the best on the team, gets the walk, and, you know, we kind of get going here, and Reeves lines out, but then Bryce lays down just a nearly perfect bunt. I mean, absolutely perfect. And then Reese doubles to right field. For a second there, I thought that ball was going to get out of there. Both runs score within just milliseconds of each other. But now it's 3-3, and you think, okay, we've got him on the ropes here. And then Sullivan walks, and then Hines goes down swinging, and Downs flies out to right. And here you are with the go-ahead run at second base and less than two outs. And you can't even get a productive out. But the game is tied. Now you're thinking, okay, we've weathered the storm here. Their dugout's not chirping as much. Nate Williams comes in, gets a 1-2-3 inning. I thought he was really good. Bottom of six, we go 1-2-3, and then we get to the seventh. We get Mendoza singles to left, and then on an 0-2 pitch, we just kind of we miss a spot, and we leave a breaking ball up. And former Big 12 player of the year, Bellew hits a two-run bomb, makes it a 5-3 ball game. We rally some here in the bottom of seven, though, as we have. And we've had seven losses this year, and six of the seven, we've had a chance to win it in the ninth, or at least tie it. Reeves singles down the right field line. Chance then lines out and flies out. And I thought that ball was going to get down for a second. And then fielder's choice. So, again, tying runs at the plate, and Sullivan singles to center. So now the tying runs are on base. And the winning run comes to the plate. And Hunter Hines hits a couple fouls and then pops up. So, again, big situation here for Hines, and just, you know, it didn't happen. And so we lose the ball game 5-3. But it's one of those situations where you get even and you could never get over the hump. And these are the kinds of games you have to win. I mean, this is life and times in the SEC. This is how things are going to go. You're going to have to get timely hitting. There's not going to be – nobody's going to give you a game in the SEC. They're just not – it's not going to happen that way. But our – you know, looking at game two, you know, you have just six hits in the ball game, and granted they pitched it well, but Noah Sullivan with a couple of hits and, you know, still performing at a pretty high level here. Ace Reese with the two RBI there. But Ben Davis, I mentioned, he just didn't have it. Absolutely didn't have it. Goes 2 2/3, allows three runs on three hits, four walks, and all of it seemed like all of those were huge and a hit by pitch. So we gift them five free passes, and I believe three of those five scored. I think it's correct. And then Sierra comes in again. The scoreless streak is ridiculous. He goes 2 1/3, walks one, strikes out five. Just 29 pitches, too. Very efficient. And then Nate Williams comes in. Nate's been filthy for us all year. Leaves one ball up, and it proves to be the difference in the ballgame. Fairly significant, you know. But it's not. This is not just about one pitch. It's about several pitches that we didn't put in play. So we go to game two just trying to salvage a game. You know, you want to avoid getting swept. Again, we said opening the show, worst-case scenario, you want to go 1-2. You never want to go 0-3. You always want to get one because, you know, you're trying to get to around 18 SEC wins to give yourself a realistic chance of hosting. And we've made that job a lot more difficult now. You know, now you start thinking about this, you know, you're probably going to have to go 18-9. Yeah, so you're going to have to pick up a sweep somewhere because you're not winning every series the rest of the way. You're going to have to pick up some sweeps somewhere. I mean, you could possibly host at 17 the way this league beats each other up, but I think 18 is probably where you need to be. And right now you're chasing a season. Carson Ligon gets a loss in game two, but I thought Carson pitched really well. I thought it was a nice return to form. You know, he pitched last week, and I thought, well, it'll all kind of come to fruition next week. But Carson was good. And again, maybe Justin Parker knows a lot more than we do. But we get a 1-2-3 inning there in the first, and it was a clean inning. It wasn't like we went out there and, you know, walked a couple guys and pitched around them. It was a clean 1-2-3 inning, and really thought that he did a good job kind of commanding all three pitches for strikes. All right, bottom of first, we get a leadoff walk. We do nothing with it, even though we end up getting the single. And having runners at first and second, we ended up Noah Sullivan hits into the double play, you know. And, again, there you go. Runner in scoring position with less than two outs, and you can't move him. As great as Noah Sullivan's been, you know, we don't expect him to bat 1,000, but certainly needed to come through right there. We give up the home run to Galvin, who had a really good weekend against us, and he actually hits a good pitch here. He goes down and kind of gets in his legs and gets that ball up into that jet stream. It was blowing out about 20 miles an hour at the time. Solo home run. We followed up with a hit by pitch, but then we kind of pitch around some anxiety here, and we get out of the top of second, just down 1-0. We go 1-2-3 there in the second, and then Carson gets him 1-2-3 there in the third. Bottom of three, we tie it here. Heifel is hit by the pitch and then still second. We get the sack bunt down, move him to third, and then Stallman comes up. Big hit. We talk about situational hitting. Here's where we executed exceptionally well. He actually takes the ball the other way. They credit it to the middle, but it was to the shortstop side of the bag. Just needed to put a ball in play here, and we do, and it ends up being a base hit. Chases to run home and ties, and then you still got a runner on base. Chance strikes out, and Reese then flies out down the line and left. But the game is now tied again. You know, so now you're even, you know, with just four innings left to play. We give it right back. Rodriguez grounds out to second. Then Galvan, again, he killed us. Double down the line. Borba singles through. The run comes in. Gasparino flies out. We bring in Mekhi Grant, who I think had his best outing as a Bulldog. And he gets a ground out to get out of it and came back and pitched exceptionally well. Bottom four, we have a chance again to tie it. Sullivan's hit by the pitch, and then Hines grounds into the double play. Downs walks, and then Fry grounds out the second. So traffic on the bases, but we're not able to do anything of significance, not even to get a man in scoring position. All right, top of five, Grant comes in there and strikes out the side, and some of these counts were a little bit elongated, but he never gave in. And again, I think he is going to be big for us down the stretch. But again, we're down one here as we get the bottom of five. And again, a chance for us here in the fifth to make something happen. Heifel strikes out swinging. Actually a lengthy at bat. Wasn't a bad at bat. And Ross had a decent weekend. And then Cup walks again. You know, what a great nine-hole hitter he's turning out to be. Not just hitting for a good average, but also just getting on base. And then Stallman walks. So we've got this guy on the ropes here. And so he balks, right? And so on a balk, you are granted a base, and you can advance at your own peril. And I understand both sides of this. And, of course, when they get out, people are like, oh, we shouldn't have sent him. Well, if he scores, you can say, hey, that's being aggressive. If we don't send him and then we don't get the hit, then the conversation is, well, we should have sent him. So basically the pitcher, Grubbs, throws to first and nobody's covering. Okay, that's a balk, okay? So everybody is gifted the next bag, but we just take off, go, and I think it says something, maybe Cubs speed, not quite what it was before the injury, and he'll get there, not being critical of a Cup here. But, you know, we would have had runners at second and third with one out, with Bryce Chance and Ace Reese coming up. And, again, discretion is a better part of valor, but they had to make a play, and they did. And, you know, the ball bounces right to the right fielder. He one hops it to the plate, and they tag Cup out. It was a very, very close play, but, yes, he was out. And then Bryce goes down swinging, you know. And you got to think, well, he struck out anyway. Guys, the approach changes a little bit, right? And that's one of the things a lot of people talk about approach without understanding, that the approach for a hitter is different every at-bat. Every bat. Now, you may have a game plan, overarching game plan from the beginning, say, hey, on this particular pitcher, you know, we want to work away, or we want to, you know, take the breaking ball because he can't consistently throw it for a strike. So you have a scouting report on the pitcher. But the approach changes. If Bryce Chance comes up with runners at second and third, then maybe a ground ball to second gets you to run. Or maybe you're looking for something to elevate to get the sac fly. It's just a completely different dynamic. Because at this point, we talk about situational hitting. You're trying to set up a situation here with a seasoned hitter that we just needed to put a ball in play. You know, give me a productive out. Give me a ground ball to the right side. Give me a fly ball to left. We're going to tag and score and tie the ball game. But we don't. Top of six. Grant walks Flores, and then we bring in Charlie Foster. He lives. He gets rolls up to double play and then gets Galvan to strike out swinging, which I think was probably one of the only times that we retired him without a lot of trepidation. State goes 1-2-3 in the bottom of six. In top of seven, we have a little problem again, and Texas did what great teams do. It's closing time, and they got some big insurance runs here. Gasparino with a one-out double down the line and left. And then Schuessler hits the ground ball to third. Tough play here. Kind of takes you into foul territory and ends up being a single there. Then we get Farmer to strike out looking. So two out. We just need to get out. You know, we're one pitch away from getting out of this. And then Mendoza, the leadoff hitter, does a really good job lacing one back up the middle. And that's off McPherson, who's been nails for us. We bring in Dane Burns. Dane didn't look good yesterday either, and that's just part of the deal. And he walks the first two. We had to go get Hungate, and we get an absolute screamer headed for left, and Reese is able to get a glove on it. But two runs have scored in the inning. You know, it's just, you know, you walk in the run. That's just, you know, it's not good. Bullpen's been good, but we had some innings this weekend that weren't up to par, and this is one of them. So instead of it being a 2-1 game, it's now a 4-1 game. So Downs grounds out to third to open, and then Reeves gets the infield single. They challenge it. It's clear that he was safe. And then Highfill, ground ball, they force the runner. But, again, you got a chance here. And then Dylan Cup, really good at bat here, singles through the left side. So now the tying run comes to the plate again. And Stallman grounds out to third. They review it. He was out. And then State loses the ball game. And again, there's just so many instances here. And, you know, the margin for error when you only play seven is razor thin. You know, you got to get that timely hit to kind of get things going. Bulldogs with just four hits in the ball game. And, of course, one of those comes there in the ninth. Or two of them came in the ninth inning. Or seventh inning, pardon me. You know, we got to be better offensively. Because this, I mean, granted, Texas is a really good club. And we're going to see some other pitching staffs as talented as them. You know, and maybe they're better than people realize. We did a good job against Jared Spencer. We had a good game plan and should have won the game. But Jason Flores goes 3 2/3, allows one run on two hits. Walk two, struck out two. We're putting the ball in play, you know. Max Grubbs allows no runs on two hits and gets another save for them. It's been really good for them. But Ligon, 3 2/3, four hits, two runs, four Ks, and no walks. Had the one hit by pitch, but the 61 pitches. And, you know, when you start thinking about this, when you give up four runs in a Sunday game, you ought to win. Mekhi Grant, 1 1/3, no runs, no hits. He did have the one walk. Also, three punchies. Charlie Foster, a return to action, one hit, one run. McPherson, two hits, one run. Dane Burns, of course, walks in the run, not charged to his credit, but did not retire a hitter. And then Hungate has to come in and get us out of it. But, you know, it kind of is what it is, you know. And that's the thing now is you begin to kind of look ahead at what's left. We knew that this was a front-loaded schedule for us, right? Texas comes here, preseason top 20 team. We knew that was going to be tough. We thought we'd at least get one, hoping to get two. We don't get any. Now we got to go to Oklahoma, who won the series over South Carolina on the road this week. Oklahoma been pretty good so far. We'll preview them later in the week. But you get Jackson State, then you get Oklahoma, and then the next week you travel to LSU. So we knew these first three weekends were going to be difficult, and you're just kind of hoping maybe you can find a way to be 4-5 or so, be around 500. Well, we've already made that more difficult for ourselves. Now you're in a situation where you're going to have to sweep somebody or win both series to kind of be where you think you'd be. But we're chasing the season now, and that's what happens. You know, every pitch matters. Every inning matters. Every situation matters because of the fact at the end of the year, they're going to tabulate all of your wins and your losses against these 30 SEC games, and then they're going to rank everybody based on that. And that's going to determine, you know, who hosts and who doesn't and all that kind of stuff. All that stuff is very important. And I think it's, you know, we can't look at it and say, well, we got 27 games left. You have to focus on today's game. You got to focus on this inning, this at-bat, this pitch. It's also incredibly important because if you start thinking about that, well, we have plenty of time stuff, you don't have a sense of urgency. So we will play Jackson State on Tuesday, and I hope to talk to Coach Johnson today. That's the plan anyway. You can hear me typing here. Let's just take a quick look at, you know, Jackson State's actually 12-6 overall right now. Did you know that? Yeah. It's a pretty good Jackson State team. Let's just take a look here. What'd they do here? Let's see. I gotta look at the calendar all the time. Their first weekend in SWAC play, they lose 2 of 3 to Prairie View. Yeah, they win the first one 12-0. They lose in 11. 7-6, and they lose on Sunday 9-5. So they have lost 4 of 5, got off to a really good start. You know, playing a lot of teams up there of similar station, I guess you could say. But 12-6, and listen, they'll come in here looking to win a ball game, you know, and I'm eager to see who they elect to pitch. You know, that's always interesting, you know, and you're kind of looking at this stuff too. Like they played two midweek games on a Wednesday against Lane College, but hadn't been a ton of midweeks. They did play UNO, lose that game 16-10, and then played a couple against Tougaloo. You know, so they've played a few midweeks out there, but you know, not a big pattern to kind of work with, I guess you could say. So we'll have pitching matchups later today. But, you know, it's a game we got to take care of. You know, Joseph Eichenberger's still there. Do you remember him? For a while there last year, he was leading the nation in hits. The guy's legit, man. He is. And he came in here and had some hits against us. But, yeah, Joseph Eichenberger, 397 hitter for them. Jordan McLeady hitting 375. You know, but as a team, his team's hitting 314. You know. They're not going to show up here and just take a check and go to the house. That's not at all what they're looking to do. But it is interesting. They have used some of their weekend guys at times to throw bullpens, I guess, during the midweek. You know, so there's no clue what you're going to see from them. Carson Foster is a left-handed pitcher out of Tupelo who was tossed some in the midweeks. Got a couple starts under his belt, three appearances. Miles Thomas has kind of been one of their primary relievers, a junior out of Tuscaloosa. He also has started in the midweek, done a little bit of everything for them. We'll have more on them later today over at jeanspage.com. But, yeah, I mean, we're going to play. I mean, we should be able to dominate these guys, you think, from a talent standpoint. But Coach Omar Johnson, those guys do a good job at Jackson State. And what a heartbreaker for the Jackson State men's team to make it to the SWAC championship game and then not have the opportunity to advance to the NCAA tournament. That's where we are. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. If you're bringing a large group to town, and if you're not, maybe you should be. You should be the linchpin in your family and make the plans, because we all say it, we don't get together enough. We don't get together enough. And so rather than just sit around and say that, take some action. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can look at all the pictures of all the amenities that are available to you and your guests, that full-service kitchen, the wet bar, that great back porch area, the fire pit area, six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths, off the beaten path a little bit, just out past the Highlands, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right then and there. Instead of packing up all that stuff and bringing it to campus, you can just cook a nice meal right there. You can just snack all day, right? It's a great thing. So whether it is a ball game weekend retreat, a work event, a college roommates reunion, maybe it's a bachelorette party. We don't want you getting too crazy, ladies, but it is in a quieter area, so you can have some peace and quiet. Plenty of parking out there too. I love it. And we've stayed there, and it was a great experience. I can't recommend it highly enough. When you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, you're going to have some booking options pop up. Airbnb, VRBO, you can go that route if you want to. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10, to get 10% off your stay. Right? Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Without question. All right, so real quickly, just to kind of summarize kind of where we are on this baseball side of things, the first thing that I will tell you is we have not played up to my expectations. The second thing that I'll tell you is that we are incredibly close. You know, it's one of those things when coaches say that, but you guys can see it, right? We continue to rally late, but we have struggled to get the big decisive hit. And I asked Bryce Chance about that. He goes, it's a little bit tight right now, when guys go up there. And it's kind of one of those things, like once you break through, it becomes a little easier to do. Because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You start thinking, man, every time, man, we always rally and we get the tying run on base or the winning run on base, we can't get them home. All of a sudden, you kind of start believing that. And so somebody's got to come through. And my hope is it's not against Jackson State. I'm hoping we can get some, get some distance between us and them. And then we head to Oklahoma, and I'm eager to get there. Number one, I have never covered a game at Oklahoma. Once I do, I will complete my bingo card, and I will be the first Mississippi State and perhaps the first SEC scribe to cover a game on all 16 SEC campuses. And that's something that may not mean anything to you. It means something to me. But, we've got our work cut out for us, and the schedule kind of eases up a little bit, but there really are no easy weekends in the SEC. And so along those lines, I kind of wanted to look back real quick at kind of the weekend that was. And kind of, you know, it's kind of is what it is, you know. And you're not going to be able to tell a lot about these teams, I guess, just yet. You know, there's just so much of that that I think that people forget a couple years ago, you know, Tennessee really struggled coming out of the gate, even Tennessee. But first weekend of play, of course, Texas sweeps Mississippi State. Tennessee sweeps Florida. And that's a matchup between two top 10 teams. Georgia takes 2 of 3 at home against Kentucky. Auburn takes 2 of 3 against Vanderbilt. And then Alabama goes to A&M and sweeps A&M. Man, what a mess A&M is in right now. Arkansas takes 2 of 3 from Ole Miss. And then Oklahoma, 2 of 3 from South Carolina. And so three teams that were swept over the weekend. And we were one of them. And it's so easy to get, oh, by the way, LSU sweeps Missouri. Yeah, sorry. That kind of goes without saying. But, you know, I said after seeing Tennessee play in Houston that I felt like Tennessee was the best team in the country. And I know everybody's like, LSU. LSU's number one right now, so it's difficult to drop them after an undefeated week. But, man, that's a loud series win for Tennessee to take those three from Florida. And they're the defending national champions. And as one of our astute posters over at jeanspage.com mentioned, it looks like they're avoiding the curse, you know, right? State had it, Ole Miss had it, LSU had it to a lesser extent. But everybody kind of had some challenges. But Tennessee playing better than anybody in the country right now, in my estimation. But looking back at Sunday scores, you know, you talk about a Sunday game like Georgia at home at Foley Field in a launching pad. 24 hits in the ballgame. Georgia wins 17-10 over Kentucky. And then Tennessee, 7-4 winners over Florida. And, again, big innings, right? Big innings and situational hitting. Florida with 4 in the fourth, but Tennessee just kind of stacks it together, right? 1 in the third, 1 in the fourth, 1 in the fifth, 2 in the sixth, and then 2 in the eighth, doing what good teams do. You're up 5-4 late, and you put 2 runs up, and the air comes out of the balloon when that happens. Missouri hung in there for a while with LSU. Some actually pretty competitive games, but the Tigers win 10-5. Arkansas and Ole Miss, kind of a wild one there. 26 hits between the two teams, and Arkansas with 4 in the ninth that proved to be the difference. It's crazy. Nuts. You know, what a wild series. And clearly this Ole Miss team has proven to be a little bit better than we expected. Still a long season to go. Oklahoma scores 1 in the 10th to take the series from South Carolina. It's all very interesting. Auburn, of course, with 4 in the 8th. And they hang on there in the ninth to beat Vandy 7-6 to take that series. Again, Auburn's one of those teams. I don't think they're going to contend. But, man, I think they're going to be an improved team. And Alabama, 2-0 winners to sweep Texas A&M. Guys, Texas A&M now is 10-9 on the year. 10-9. With all of the resources and with that monster lineup coming back. And, yes, you lose Grohovic for the year and Sorrell's been out for a while. But to be 10-9 is not great. And you start thinking about this Texas A&M team. Are they going to make the tournament? That's crazy to think about that. He said, but, you know, Steve, we're 0-3 too. Yeah, but we don't have these bad midweek losses like they have. We have some, but they're not bad midweek losses. This A&M team is struggling, and it's a lot of challenges for a first-year head coach to kind of pull, you know, find a way to help him pull up here. All that stuff is incredible to think about. You know, so I just share that with you because of the fact it's a long season. There's a lot to consider, but we have got to figure out, you know, some things on the road. And sometimes going on the road is good. Polk used to say the same thing. You know, it takes some guys some road series to kind of figure what it's like to pitch at home. You know, it's there's a lot of people out there. And I've had conversations with people around this league, and just to kind of be honest about it, You make a mistake in a Tuesday game at Kentucky, the only people that know were those that were in attendance. You make a mistake in a Tuesday game at Mississippi State, you got 100 notifications on your phone before you get to the locker. There are expectations here, and we have to be able to rise to meet those expectations. But yeah, extremely disappointing weekend, and it does put us in a situation where we have to have a sense of urgency. And you can't let the season get away the first three weekends. You can't, because you can't count on sweeps later. And so we're going to have to kind of right the ship and go to Oklahoma here looking to win a series. You know, before, you start thinking, well, you got to go on the road, you got to get one. Now our motivation has to change. We got to find a way to go get that series against an Oklahoma team that lost a lot, but it's playing really well right now. And, of course, anytime you go on the road and take a series, it's huge. So we look forward to getting over there. Credentials are already taken care of. Hotel's already booked. I'm eager to get there. But a lot of big things happening this week, obviously. We'll have a press conference with Sam Purcell today. We'll have a chance to speak to Jeff Lebby on Tuesday, and, of course, the game against Jackson State. And then we'll be back with you guys on Wednesday to kind of preview the weekend it is. And then we'll head to Norman. Yeah, so super excited about all that stuff and eager to get out there and just kind of see what's available to us. But a lot of times on Mondays, you guys get the show at night. But, yeah, the struggles of the weekend kind of kept me up. Woke up at like 4:30, just wide awake. And I said, I think I need to go record the show. So, listen, we're all in this thing together. And, no matter how things turn out, we're going to be together, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think it's important right now the focus is, let's focus on these men's and women's basketball tournaments and these games at Norman. Let's not try to go think about what the end of everything looks like. Let's take it one day at a time. It's the only way to live. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com, and you can get signed copies of all of my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Alpha Dogs, Stark Villains, Dog Pile, and, of course, The Dude. In addition, my book, When the Bottom Falls, you know, just kind of a story about recovery and redemption. A lot of people have told me it's my best book, and I appreciate that. I was very transparent in the book, and so whether you're a person that's in recovery or just a person that enjoys a comeback story, that book could be for you. Come float with us over at True Rest Float Spa Star. We had a really good day yesterday. You know, Saturday was a little different because people wanted to stay home. You know, so we had a lot of people that canceled and rescheduled. But, yeah, it's a good chance for you to kind of get in and be a part of things. If you have questions about floating, you can call my wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601. I'm going to float today, and I need to after that sweep. Kind of got to reset. So if you're a person that struggles with chronic anxiety or pain, or you just need a break for yourself, we may be able to help you. We've helped many others. And we have some people that float every week, you know, and they just found some relief in it. And I think you should, too. It's a great experience, and I don't ever like to talk about people as individuals and give names, things like that, but we had a grandmother that got to come recently as a gift from her granddaughters and had an absolute blast, and she said, oh, my gosh, I needed this, and chances are you do, too. And so reach out to her, and she can tell you, too, about our discount plans for people that want to be frequent floaters. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.